Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And this is Christian Andriacchio, Part 2.
And before we get started, make sure you guys go to podbean.com and check out Murder with the Misses.
Yeah. We are in Part 2 of what could easily have been an 8-part series. But we love you, and we value your time. So we read all the reports, saw pictures we can't unsee, and have put the pertinent information in 2 easy installments just for you. Make sure you've listened to Part 1 so that you have a baseline for this one. We left off where Christian was found, labeled a suicide. There was no real investigation at first. Because of that, there was so much that could have been done that wasn't. And we will start this one with the statements of the only other 2 people reportedly in the apartment that day, Whitley and Dylan. Whitley was transported to the station, and Dylan drove himself in for the statements. Dylan said that Christian called him early that morning. Records show it was at 1:37 a.m., and he was asking for a ride. They planned on Dylan being at St. Rose, Louisiana, between 7 and 8 a.m. It was roughly a 3-hour drive from Meridian. So he picks him up at around 8 a.m. They only stopped for gas, and they got to the apartment at around 11:23 a.m. He told police that during the ride home is when Christian told him that he was coming home to kick Whitley out. But we find out later that Dylan was the friend that had been calling and texting him the day before, tattling on Whitley and her activities. Once at the apartment, Christian and Whitley started arguing immediately. Whitley confessed to being on Xanax and that she didn't remember a lot about what happened the night before. Christian threw Whitley's phone into the wall, so that would explain the hole in the wall that Josh said wasn't there when he left. Dylan had went upstairs to avoid the arguing, but kept hearing Christian say, "Do you love me?" over and over. He went to the railing and looked over to see Christian holding a gun to his head, asking the question. He said that Whitley tried to grab the gun from him. None of this is in Whitley's statement. He said he hid Christian's gun after he set it down, and after a while, things calmed down and they watched a movie. That went fast. After the movie, Dylan asked Christian if he wanted him to go get some food for everybody. Christian gives him his debit card and tells him to pick up Chick-fil-A, go by the phone store and get Whitley's phone looked at, and you know, while you're out, go ahead and go to my bank and empty out my bank account. Okay. Telling Dylan he could keep all of the money. The fuck? He did go to the bank, but they wouldn't let him withdraw any money from an account that he's not on. Shocker. I'll put this photo up on the Facebook too, because he is at the teller at 12:29 with the debit card in one hand and a lit up phone in the other, like he's showing something to the teller. We find out later that he had a text from Christian's phone with his account number and social security number, so maybe that's what he was trying to show the teller. But even banks know that a text can come from anyone. I can change the name of a contact in my phone to something completely different and make it look like the text come from somewhere it didn't.
And I can take your phone and type a text out to someone and it looks like it came from you when it was me.
Yeah.
Banks aren't stupid.
Not as stupid as he wanted them to be.
But what bank is open at 12:29? This is at night, right?
No, it's the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he picked him up at 8 that morning, and they made it to the apartment by 11:23 that morning.
Oh, okay, so I thought this was all like late night in the morning.
No, this is middle of the day.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was middle of the night.
Mm-mm. Nope. Bright, bright day.
Okay.
And pay attention to that timeline, too. So they got home at 11:23, and he's at the bank by 12:29. So yeah. All of that happened in an hour.
And why would he say, "Go ahead and go get some Chick-fil-A, get my lady's phone fixed"?
Yeah, errand boy.
And while you're at it, just go ahead and take the money out of my bank. You can keep it.
Just keep it all.
Yeah, it's like a big tip.
I think they were saying, and this is pure speculation on my part. This is my opinion. Mm-hmm. Don't sue me.
Don't sue me.
I think that they were trying to set up the whole suicide angle because, here, keep my money. I'm not going to need it because I'm about to commit suicide. You know what I mean? So I think he was trying to set up the angle, but it just gets more suspicious. That just threw in a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Like a dummy.
Yeah, don't sue us because you can't have the money ever, right?
I mean, you can have it if you want it, but
there's not much.
Only if you want a McChicken. Just kidding.
Bill McDouble.
So, yeah, so that's like an hour time frame that they got home, had a heated argument, settled down, watched a movie, and then he went to the bank. So in an hour, movies alone are about an hour and a half long. And neither Whitley nor Dylan could recall what movies were watched that day. But most movies, like I said, are an hour and a half. Or if it's on cable or something and you add in commercial time, you're talking about 2 hours.
Like Taken.
That's like 8 hours, it feels like. Sorry, Haley.
Taken. Taken two. Taken three.
You'd think he'd learn after the first one. And also, if it was on TV, then that would give the police another piece to the timeline depending on when it aired, right?
Yeah.
But that would have to be if they actually investigated. And they didn't even ask them. They asked them what movies they watched, and they were like, I don't know.
They'd have to go back to tape on their cell phones.
For what?
To investigate.
Hang on, let me get my iPhotos. Yeah. I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Let me go back to the cloud.
And there was no mention of Whitley's phone being fixed. So I don't even know if her phone got fixed or not that day. They don't really have any call logs from her after that time. So I don't think it was. I don't know. But he does get the Chick-fil-A. And he goes back to the apartment where they watched another unknown movie. Christian and Whitley get up to leave, saying that they're going to go for a ride. And Dylan decides to take a 2-hour nap during this time. Whitley's statement does come in here, saying that they drove to Bonita, which is about 5 minutes away, and talked about their relationship. She says that Christian said between her and his mom, he couldn't make anyone happy. Her statement then jumps back to the apartment, where she and the dog go into their first floor room to take a nap. She had done roughly 4 Xanax bars, so she was having a hard time staying awake. Dylan picks up here when he said he woke up from his nap to Christian sitting on the couch smoking a cigarette. Others have said that he never smoked inside, though, so that was another weird thing.
Dylan thought this was a good time to go to Best Buy and look at some speakers.
Well, yeah. He got real random.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he's got all that money now.
Nuh-uh, they wouldn't let him have it.
Well, but he still got his card, probably.
Probably.
It's speculation, people. Speculation. That's all speculation. That was a joke.
There's so many lawsuits in this case.
Speculation.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
His timeline is so fucked up through his whole statement. So it looks like he got home with lunch. You could say maybe around 1 or so. Watched a movie. Took a 2-hour nap. Now, even if he fell asleep immediately after getting home at 1, that would put us after 3 o'clock. Christian was supposed to be back on the boat at St. Rose by 5:30, which is 3 hours away. So nobody seemed to find this odd. But he did say, so Whitley said that Christian had told her he quit his job or was quitting his job. So that's why she says it's not a big deal. Dylan said that when he got in the truck that morning, he told them that he left without permission, so he was going to end up getting fired anyways. So I guess that's why nobody thought it was a big deal that they're just lounging around the house when he's supposed to be 3 hours away. But in his statement, before he left the second time to go to Best Buy, he gave Christian his gun back, telling him to unload it and don't touch it. Police asked why he gave the gun back, and he said it was because he couldn't take it with him. He didn't feel the need to do this before he left the first time, so I don't know why this time is any different. He goes to Best Buy, he talks to someone about speakers, and then he comes back to the apartment, but Christian is not on the couch anymore. He sees the bathroom light on at the top of the stairs and assumes Christian is taking a shower. Now, the issue I see right there is, why did you not check to see if he was in bed with Whitley? My first thought would be that he went to take a nap too. Everybody's taking a nap. Why wouldn't he go take a nap? But he doesn't. He goes up to the bathroom door and he knocks on the door asking Christian if he's all right. No answer. He goes downstairs and tries to wake up Whitley, but she just goes right back to sleep. So he goes back upstairs, knocks, asks again if Christian is okay. But again, no response. He opens the door, sees Christian laying over the tub, and he screams, "Whitley, Christian is dead. We have to call 911. And we played that 911 call on the first part, so if you want to hear it, go back and check it out. Whitley runs up the stairs and immediately starts holding Christian while Dylan makes the call. He tells the operator that there's blood everywhere. But remember, there's only blood in the bathtub. Dylan never went into the bathroom. He never checked for a pulse. He never tried CPR or anything. It's just weird. Whitley's story changes like Oklahoma weather, even to the cops. One story is that she found Christian, not Dylan. Sometimes it's that she woke up to the gunshot, but she was asleep when Christian says he got there. Big things like that change, not just like little details. But that day, immediately after it, her statement shows that she slept through the gunshot, which the chief of police says would have been able to be heard 3 apartments away, possibly. And the police did do the gunshot residue test, which I'll give them that. At least they did that. And I'm going to refer to those as GSR to save breath going forward. They did the test on Christian, Whitley, and Dylan. Whitley tells them that she's going to test positive because she was at what is now referred to as gun night the night before with Matt, his cousin Jet, and his friend Zach. She was hanging out with Matt when Jet came in saying he got a new gun and asked if they wanted to go shooting. Jet's statement is that Whitley shot the gun once or twice. But Matt's statement was that she did not shoot the gun. She was supposedly so scared of it that when Jet was shooting it, Whitley was in Matt's lap with her and Matt's hands over her ears. Now, Whitley would end up staying the night with Matt, and they did have sex that night. The next morning, she went to the apartment to wait for Christian, and he went to work.
Whitley and Dylan had more GSR on their hands than Christian, but they said they weren't even in the room. They said they wasn't even in the room.
Yeah, they weren't in the bathroom when Christian shot himself.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah.
He was at Best Buy, and she was taking a nap.
So they wasn't in the room.
Nope.
When Christian supposedly shot himself.
Nope.
Okay. But they had more of the gunshot residue.
Yep.
Than the guy that committed suicide.
Yes.
Totally makes sense.
Right?
Yep.
2 and 2 equals 5.
Sounds legit. Which police department was this?
Meridian, Mississippi.
Meridian, Mississippi.
That some of these podcasters and YouTubers have done deep dives on the issues in Meridian, just on their own.
Yeah.
And holy shit. It's like really bad, really bad down there.
Yeah.
And Christian only had GSR on his right palm and the back of his left hand. Now, experts say that if he was holding the gun when it went off, he would not be able to have residue on his right palm. The handle of the gun would have blocked it. But there could be residue all around it, mostly on the back of his right hand. But there wasn't any there. Experts also say that GSR can stay on a living, moving person for around 4 to 8 hours, but always depends on that person's activities, obviously. Now, that throws Whitley's excuse for having GSR on her from the night before out the window. Even if she didn't touch any door handles, or touch anything for that matter, if she didn't have sex, possibly 3 times based on Matt's statement, didn't wash her hands or take a shower, didn't try to grab the gun when her and Christian were fighting that morning, didn't touch the bedding or the dog when she took a nap. You see where I'm going with this? All of these activities would have removed some of that GSR from the night before. So let's talk about the autopsy. The coroner said that the time of death was 3:45 p.m. and the cause of death was undetermined. The autopsy states that the cause of death was suicide. The autopsy shows a small cut on the bridge of his nose, but doesn't offer any explanation as to how that could have happened. speculation is that he could have hit there when he fell into the tub, because remember, his arms are outside. But if you believe that his body was moved after he was shot and put in that position, then what happened to his nose? There was lividity. When your blood stops pumping through your body, gravity takes over. So whatever part is facing down for a long period of time after you die, you'll see a purplish color on the skin. Like if you're laying on your back, you'll see the blood settle on the backside of your body. Christian had lividity on the back of his right leg, so the thigh and the calf. And I saw the autopsy photos, and I can see some on the back of his left thigh too, but nowhere near what was on the right side. So if his body, the way it was found, his calves would have been facing up towards the ceiling, not down towards the floor. And if you understand gravity, it doesn't go up. It goes down. So that would mean that his body had to be in a different position for a significant amount of time before he was rolled over, placed in his position, and 911 was called. The autopsy also showed signs of lividity on his right front waist as well, just a small bit of it. His rigor was so advanced when he was found that he had to be transported as he was, which was bent at the waist and face down. Rigor mortis sets in anywhere between 4 to 12 hours after death, and his body was already in advanced rigor when first responders arrived.
A lot of experts say that he died hours before the 911 call, that he more than likely died right after they got to the apartment that morning, and that makes more sense.
Right. That makes 2 and 2 make 4 instead of 5, like earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said it was between 4 to 12 hours, meaning 4 hours at the very least amount of time.
Yeah.
And if first responders got there just after 5, that would mean he would have had to have died around 1 or so. And they got to the apartment just before noon.
Yeah, but they're saying that rigor sets him 4 to, yeah, you're right, so mm-hmm. 4 to 12 hours.
Yeah, that puts his death literally within like an hour of them getting to the apartment.
Yeah.
Most of the surrounding apartment occupants were not home during all this time, but there is reportedly one person who said that they heard something that could have been a gunshot between noon and 1 o'clock. So there's that. More suspicion.
Wait a minute, what now?
So someone in another apartment heard a noise sometime between noon and 1 that day that they said could have been a gunshot.
Okay.
But that was only one person.
That was just one person.
Yeah, because everybody else was gone to work.
But yet it could have been heard over up to 3 apartments away.
But Whitley slept through it.
Just Whitley slept through it, and Dylan was at Best Buy.
Yep. Checking on them speakers. Now, 4 months after his death, a new police chief came in. He told 48 Hours that he believes Christian and Whitley argued, Christian held the gun to his head, Whitley grabbed it, and it went off. And then the scene was staged. His theory would mean that based on Dylan's statement, when he went to the bank that day, Christian would have already been dead. So he definitely wouldn't have asked him to go to the bank for him. Many think this is actually what happened, and that Dylan and Whitley saw an opportunity, and that's why the rest of the day unfolded the way it did. Fast forward to 3 years later, and the police chief assigned the case to Captain Arrington to investigate. He agreed that Christian died well before the 911 call was made, and that the scene was definitely staged. He went as far as to write arrest warrants for Dylan and Whitley for manslaughter, because he felt like manslaughter would be easier to prove. But these warrants were never served. His reports were not presented to the grand jury in 2017 either. That was confirmed by jurors from the grand jury. Arrington made his reports public in 2020, and then shortly after, he was indicted for using funds for personal use. His attorney says that these claims are false. So it's basically like he put his shit out to the public, and then they're like, oh, he's not credible. He's not a good, don't listen to him.
Talking about the investigator?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And the family, they hired their own experts, as they do. crime scene reconstruction and forensic agencies, and these experts say that there was what looks like some blood spatter on the sink, gun, and the wall around the sink where that outlet is, but to the naked eye, they're just small dots. All they have to go off of are the pictures that the police took, and then Josh took some pictures when the family was allowed back into the apartment. Since these stains were never tested, no one can say what they were. And the bullet has something on the nose that looks like wallboard, but that was never tested either. There was a luminol test done, and it shows a lot of blood spatter around the door area and wall behind it. There is also a place void of spatter, which could have been the door being opened or a person standing there that would have blocked it. This picture was presented to the grand jury, but they presented it in black and white. So it shows nothing but the light coming through the cracks of the door. And I'll post both pictures on Facebook. That way you can see what the jury saw, which would be nothing, based on what the actual picture shows, and you can see purple for days. And remember that there was a DeSecchi's beer bottle on the small sink? Whitley said this was Christian's, but everyone else close to him says he didn't drink that beer. And there were pictures of someone from Gun Night who does like to drink that beer. Christian also had no drugs or alcohol in his system, per the toxicology report. There was blood saturation on his left knee, but remember, there was no blood on the floor of the bathroom. His knee would have had to have been touching the floor before, during, and after the shooting. So this is just leading to the belief that his body had been moved at some point, because how would he get, when you say saturation, it's like as it soaks up into the material, that's saturation. So his knee would have had to been there for long enough for that to go up, which means there had to have been blood in the floor at some point for it to soak up. So that's another indicator that the scene was cleaned.
Well, and what about the Chick-fil-A cup that was set in the tub?
No blood on it.
Well, I thought it was set in the pool of blood.
It was, because that's what I'm saying. If it was there when the shooting happened, where they say the shooting happened, there would be spatter on it.
Yeah.
But there was not. Hmm. It was clear.
That's See, what I'm saying.
All none this of this is, adds up.
Yeah. It was mentioned that Whitley took cigarettes out of his pocket after his body was found so she could smoke.
Yep.
But she didn't roll his whole body over to get them out.
I know.
What the fuck?
She took a pack of cigarettes out of his pocket.
I can't believe he's gone. Let me have a cigarette.
Let me just get these cigarettes off.
Hang on. Can I? Ooh, ain't no killer. Take these shoes. Friday reference. Sorry.
We speak in movie quotes a lot.
I steal. I don't kill.
Yes. Either way, who fucking does that? Like, that makes no sense. Gross.
Devo!
You need to quit. All right, let's talk about the Attorney General's report, because that is what shows phone records, including GPS. That's how we know where they were during certain times. Now, there was no GPS data recorded between 1:49 and 3:21 p.m., which they state it's because no calls or texts were sent from any of their phones during that time. I will note that there is speculation that Whitley had a burner phone to avoid Christian's tracking. So who knows what was going on with that phone at the time. But then oddly, at 3:44, which is 1 minute prior to Christian's time of death, there were calls made to Matt's phone. Remember Matt from the night before?
From Gun Night.
From Gun Night, yes.
Yeah.
There were calls made to his phone from Dylan's phone, Christian's phone, and a third phone, which they know was not the burner phone, because they know whose phone that was. I know whose phone that was, but
we won't say.
We're not going to put that information out there, so we're going to be cautious. I don't know if that's allowed to be out there, so I'm not doing it.
Yeah,
I'm not that person.
Yeah, I think it was accidentally released in text.
It was.
So, and you can actually go and see the text.
You can.
Because the, the, you know, the idiot that was texting and put the name out there released it.
But, and we're going to let it be on them.
We're going to let it be on them. We're not going to mention this name, so.
Nope. But it is odd that three phones call Matt's phone all at the exact same time. So it's super odd. And Matt didn't answer any of the calls since he was at work. And remember, also during this time, Whitley was supposedly asleep. But it's believed that Whitley was using Christian's phone all day since hers was broken. Because there were other calls made from that phone by her leading up to that time. This is also, like I said, 1 minute from what they said was the time of death. In reality, between 3:44 and 3:50, so a 6 minute time frame, Christian's phone called Matt 8 times. Dylan's phone called Matt 2 times, and the third phone called Matt 2 times. This was an hour before 911 was called. So why is everybody trying to get a hold of Matt? Dylan's supposedly at Best Buy. The third person is supposedly not even at the apartment, so I don't know how that even comes into play. And then Whitley's supposed to be asleep. But yet everybody calling Matt.
Matt's a popular person.
Apparently. And he's done interviews. He did an interview, and he said, I'm a drug dealer, but I'm not. You know, he's trying to clear his own name out of all this.
I'm a good kind of drug dealer, you know, doing the MTV. I'm like, hey, guys, want some drugs?
Want some drugs? And you can, like I said, you can do a deep dive online if you want. It's going to take you hours. We'd probably have to do a PowerPoint presentation to keep you up with all the shit that doesn't add up in this case. But we're trying to hit the pertinent stuff. Throw in the fact that according to Matt, he and Whitley had hung out a couple of years before this, but stopped talking. Then all of a sudden, when Christian left for his hitch on the 22nd, Whitley messaged him out of the blue on Snapchat wanting to hang out. She was telling him that her and Christian had broken up. He and another friend of hers told police that they believe Whitley had something to do with it and that she was a cheater, compulsive liar, and a lot of other wonderful things. So like this other friend, was someone she supposedly stayed with after Christian's death for comfort. And when the police took her statement, they were like, how would you describe Whitley? And she said, which side? She has like multiple personalities. So even her friends shit talk her.
Gotcha.
That's sad.
The phone records also show texts from Christian leading up to this where he does talk about self-harm.
Yeah. So police asked Whitley and Dylan if they thought Christian was suicidal, which they both said no. But Dylan did say that sometimes Christian would text things or say things about self-harm, but he didn't take it seriously. He felt like Christian was using that as kind of a, not really control, but maybe manipulation against Whitley to take things more serious in their relationship. Because most of the texts between he and Whitley were him building her up to pursue her dream of nursing, to go ahead and get her high school diploma instead of giving up and getting her GED. But when they were fighting, it was different. The night before the incident, he texted her, if this doesn't work, when I get to my apartment, I'm putting my pistol in my mouth and I'm ending this. I'm ending this once and for all, because Whitley, you're the closest I've ever been to happiness. Now, the family doesn't believe that he actually sent this, that somehow the phone was manipulated, but it was sent during the time that he was on the boat. So police do believe that it was legit. And there has been reports that he and Whitley were on the same iCloud account or iTunes account. So their phones were linked and you could see each other's texts and pictures and all that stuff. So there was like some speculation that this type of iPhone at this time could be hacked and you could change and manipulate text messages even after they were sent. So that's where they're coming from on that. And I'll talk about his brother, Josh, and then we'll have to stop or we'll be here for a week. The morning that Dylan went to pick up Christian, he tweeted, Meridian to New Orleans, then Vicksburg, and back to Meridian before lunch. Now remember, Vicksburg is where Christian's Jeep was parked. I'll mention that the AG report shows that neither Whitley Dylan nor Christian's phones showed that any of them went to Vicksburg that day. A couple of days after the shooting, Josh and some friends went to Vicksburg to get the Jeep. It was now on the opposite side of the parking lot, backed into a parking space, and it had a temporary U-Haul hitch attached to it. I didn't see any mention of his vehicle, either one of them, in any of the reports as being searched by police, likely because this was ruled a suicide. But I would have liked to have seen that someone went to the U-Haul to return the hitch and found out how it was rented. Either way, Josh said Christian's lockbox was gone. He, along with several others, say that he kept a lockbox in his Jeep with about $7,000 cash and a pistol in it.
Cops were reportedly given pictures of Dylan showing off what he said was $6,000 cash after Christian's death. Nobody knows where he would have gotten that kind of money from.
Well, some people do know where he would have got that money from. Yeah.
Sounds like he got it from that Jeep.
Sounds like that lockbox got found.
Sounds like me.
Yeah. But that's suspicious. If it's true.
If it's true. If it's speculation.
Allegedly. When Josh was allowed back into their apartment, he found a piece of paper in the kitchen drawer with what he believes is Whitley's handwriting, and it shows Christian's bank account number, routing number, and social. Almost like what was texted to Dylan's phone that day. And there were MoneyGram receipts made out to Whitley, so he believes that Whitley had been taking money out of Christian's account over the internet without Christian knowing about it. So you basically have what looks like two people who are using him for a place to stay, money, and all the usual freeloader stuff. Dylan even went to Christian's grandfather asking about Whitley's money from the life insurance policy that she believes Christian made her the beneficiary of. Remember that from part one? There has been no life insurance policy payout or even verification that he had one at all. And I know that some don't pay out in the event of a suicide either, so some speculation is that this is why his mom is pushing so hard for a murder conviction. It couldn't possibly be all the questionable, suspicious shit going on in the case. I mean, come on. But a lot of people think that that's why she wants it ruled as a murder, so that that life insurance will pay out because they believe she's doing it because she's the beneficiary. So sad. Another podcast did like a whole in-depth season on this, and then they got sued for it. Because remember, we talked about there was a lot of lawsuits. Fortunately, Whitley did drop the defamation suit, but this is still so unsettled that it sticks with people. And I am people. I have followed this case for years, waiting for an arrest. But we are still waiting. The last thing that was done on it was that defamation suit. So this is where we'll have to stop for this one. Hopefully we're going to be able to do an update in the near future, but we needed to get this story out there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so make sure you guys check out part one and, you know, go on Spotify, Boomplay.
Yes.
And Google.
Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Because, and they also have a Facebook page, a Justice for Christian Facebook page. They tried to get that shut down in this lawsuit, but luckily it was dropped, so it gets to stay up. But if you have any information, definitely hit up that Facebook page because his mom watches it regularly. They just need some help.
Yeah, and we'll try to put a link in on our Facebook page at Murder with the Misses. And also, you know, go check us out on YouTube. Like, subscribe, share, hit the little bell. That way you guys get notifications when new episodes drop. And we really appreciate you guys listening.
Yes, if you or someone you know needs help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by calling or texting any message to 988.
All right, well, that was it for part two. Catch us on the next one.
Bye.